Hi, I'm Benita Croyle. Welcome to another season of Holding It Together. In 2018, the Women in Leadership Committee began this podcast as a way to connect and explore the lives and experiences of people across Mennonite Church USA. This season, we will connect with people from all over the country, people who are living into the fullness of who God created them to be. People stepping out in faith and standing in their conviction. Individuals who are doing their best one day at a time to love God and neighbor, co-creating new ways of being in the world. Our stories and interviews are with people like you and me, who daily encounter joy and struggle, mundane responsibility and imperfection in the midst of high aspiration, accomplishment, and disappointment. Too often, in the context of faith and lived experience, the stories we tell are stories of overcoming, of success, of all that is waiting on the other side. Here on this podcast, we want to notice the beauty of the process, to paint pictures of authentic and whole people. Here, we recognize that to live out our convictions and to create new ways of being in the world, we need one another. We need each other, full, whole, and together with us. We need each other with us to hold together all that we carry as we journey to becoming. We need each other to bear witness to the process because, yes, some days we do shine, and we are successful beyond our wildest imaginations, but most days we are just holding it together. A little about how holding it together works. For each season, we choose a theme, and we delve into that theme over the course of about 6 episodes. Each episode will have its own style and approach. Some episodes will feature a panel for discussion. Other episodes will include talkback about a compelling article or essay and include an interview with that author. Sometimes we will have a more intimate episode where close friends or family will interview one another and I will hardly talk at all, opening up space for people who know each other really well to dig into their stories. We will also have talkback episodes where people are invited to submit a response to a question related to the series theme. Our theme for this series is Bodies Holding It Together. So over the course of the next few episodes, we will explore what it is to journey with our bodies and what it can look like to hold our bodies together. In this season of pandemic, many of us may know what it is like to carry deep pain, grief, sadness, and exhaustion in our bodies. Some of us may know trauma in our bodies and what it is like to bear witness to death. And some of us may know what it is like to experience deep joy and pleasure in our bodies. Over the next 6 episodes, we will hold these stories and celebrate the movement of the Spirit through us in the world. Remember December 31, 2019? I do. It was New Year's Eve and I was tucked inside like I normally am because people and parties, blah. Scrolling the interwebs at 8:30 p.m. with an alarm clock reminder to set to wake me up at midnight so that I could say Happy New Year's to my partner and then go back to sleep. I remember seeing that people were posting cutesy photos of themselves on social media with ironic hashtags like hashtag the future is 2020 and sharing New Year's resolutions that included goals of staying more healthy, living their best life, and engaging in self-care. But the universe had other plans, it seemed. While I won't summarize all the ways in which the pandemic has changed and continues to shape our lives, I will note that for many of us,
It changed almost everything, from our daily routine to the way we engage in relationships to the way we grieve and hold collective sorrow. Globally, unemployment rates spiked, wealth, economic, and racial disparities increased exponentially, and according to the WHO, more than 3.4 million people have passed from COVID-19. Many of us have experienced death or proximity to death and profound sorrow. And perhaps many of us experienced holding this grief alone. How do we show up with our bodies and our grief in a world that has often expected positivity and capitalistic productivity? How do we show up with our bodies and our grief and our own personal experiences when it is compounded by isolation? What does it look like to show up with our bodies, just holding it together? Today, I invited my dear friend, Carol Hersteffi, to talk about the ways grief has shown up in her life over the past year and prior and what she has learned. Carol Hersteffi is a contemplative and passionate pursuer of justice and transformation. With an undergraduate degree in management science and a seminary degree in Christian spiritual formation, her curiosity embraces scientific inquiry and spiritual and mystical experience. She is a trained spiritual director, experienced retreat leader, and creative worship leader. Carol loves birdwatching, butterflies, and the myriad of colors nature displays. In quiet moments, you will find her reading, doing word or number puzzles, walking, or enjoying in a good cup of tea and dark chocolate. Her best moments are spent in deep conversation with others and finding what brings life to one's soul. Choose life is the motto she lives by. Letting go is her spiritual discipline. Carol, thank you for being with us today. I'm so excited to learn from you, to reconnect with you, and to hear what you will bring today. The first question that I have for you, Carol, is I'm curious in what ways grief has shown up for you this past year.
Thanks, Bonnie. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. And when you first approached me, I thought, grief this past year, I've been grieving for a long time. Mm-hmm. Various things, but there are some unique griefs to this period of time. And one of them, which you hear, is in my voice. Whether it's from not being around people as much and not having as many conversations, or some things that are happening in my body as I age, it begins to affect my voice. And so for someone who loved to sing and enjoyed talking and teaching, it's been a real loss for me. I thought about grief as something that comes with loss, you know, and losses can be all kinds of things. For me, it's this physical in my voice, but there's other losses. I'm aging, and so I notice those things. It can happen when there's any change. So as you said, changes in our schedules, mm-hmm. changes in our relationships, retirement for me, since I'm retired now, new disabilities or physical limitations, dreams and hopes when we lose those of what we thought could be. And again, as part of the aging process, you know, you realize some of the dreams and hopes you had when you were younger are not going to happen. So mm-hmm. how do you hold those? And the pandemic has given me more time to sit with that and to realize, oh, that's probably not going to happen. It's a sense of a loss of security. And I think a lot of us have felt that you know, we just don't feel as safe and secure in what we are. And for me, there's many ways the last year and a half has shaken my sense of security. in new ways. And I'm not so sure it's all bad, mm-hmm. but you know, it's just a realization. Mm-hmm. Failure is a loss that we have to grieve. And, and I guess I go back to my spiritual discipline of let go, that's a whole part of this process of grieving losses. Mm-hmm. And then there's some that are, the more we become aware of things we didn't know. And for me, injustice, I've always been someone who has sought justice for people. I can remember as a young child seeking justice. And it might be because sometimes I felt that injustice in different ways than you did, but I felt it. And so I've always been someone who's been aware of injustice. But this year, the last 4 years plus, and then things that I've been reading have just really stirred my sense of outrage. Mm-hmm. So there's a grieving in my worldview that seemed a little bit nice, and I could live with that, to now a worldview that says, oh my goodness, how can we do this to one another? How can we hold these positions? I think back, Bonnie, to when you were part of our church, and I mentored you, and I'm so thrilled to see how you've grown, but I keep thinking, why couldn't we have talked about that back then? But probably because neither you nor I were quite ready for those conversations. This just being through this pandemic has brought about a whole lot of losses for me. Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like, to the forefront, identifying how they all compound upon one another. As you were saying earlier, they're not just siloed experiences. They're something that you're identifying now. And they are all interconnected. And that's hard. That's hard. Yeah. And it's brave to name what is coming to the forefront. I think about how easy it is sometimes to shy away from those hard truths. But your spiritual discipline of letting go, identifying, it sounds like identifying, naming, how can we find a way, and letting go?
That naming is so important. Mm-hmm. We have to recognize something before we can change it. And my whole life has been around recognizing things, but it feels like whether it's the stage of my life or circumstances or the reading material I'm choosing now, it's like, wow, so much loss, so much pain. And I know I can be one who, I'm comfortable talking about struggles. Mm-hmm. And, not everybody likes that. And so I think sometimes I can come across as being morbid. But I'm like, if we can't talk about the things that really touch our souls and bring us pain, we'll never get past it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things I've had to grieve in my journey. And until I could name it and grieve it, recognize it, say, wow, this is how it feels in my body. This is how it impacts my perception of the world. This is how it impacts my idea of God and my spiritual practices. I need to do all that before I can say, thank you for what lessons you've given me. Now go away. We ever let it go. It just, the let go is more a hands open or a tight fist. And I always say, when we're struggling with something, our fists are tight. And as we begin to look at it, we begin to open our hands. And so what's there can either rest there, or it can go away for a while, but it may come back again. But it can go away. And so it's a physical and mental discipline for me sometimes to say, I'm doing open hands with this.
I love that imagery. Thank you, Carol.
I'm doing open hands. you know, I thought about different stages of grief, and I was trying to recognize, you know, what in mine. I don't think there's any, there's some shock that's happened in this time, but I don't think it was the shock that we have a pandemic. It's maybe the shock of how people have responded so differently to it and how political it's become. Mm-hmm. I think for me, the biggest thing is panic. And it's not, it's an anxiety not born from, I'm afraid something's going to happen to me. It's just a visceral panic that the world doesn't feel quite the same as it did, even though a lot of things haven't changed. Yeah. But again, because my awareness is bigger, is some of it, but also because as an introvert, I like being by myself. And I've had a lot of time to be by myself. I retired 3 years ago when I had back surgery, but I did some online work, and that ended right before the pandemic started. So I didn't even have online presence with people. My husband's an essential worker. And so he was at work every day, sometimes longer than usual, because some of the workers were able to do their work from home, but he manages a facility that houses the homeless. And, you know, he had to be there. If there was an emergency at 4:30, you know, he had to be there. So just a lot of that isolation. But now as I start back into connecting with people, I get anxious. I get anxious about it. I get nervous. And then some of the old messages that I had, you know, will they like me? Yeah. Will I make sense? Mm-hmm. Will my voice hold out? You know, am I fun or am I always going for the deep? And so, you know, I've had experiences of people not able to do that. And so it's really hard. And so now I'm getting back into stretching my introvert into an extroverted world, and there's anxiety.
Yeah.
So I never recognized that as a stage of grief, but it is, because holding it together, you know, when I was out in the world, I was able to function very well. Mm-hmm. Many people didn't know I was an introvert because I learned how to be extroverted in our extroverted world. But having this space for the first time in my life to nurture the introverted part, you know, I'm like, man, it really took a lot of courage for me to do all those things that I did, to have those high aspirations, as you call them.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it feels riskier to me just in being accepted. Mm-hmm. I don't think I feel a risk as some people do that something's going to happen, something terrible is going to happen to me, I'm going to get COVID, or it's not so much that, it's my own inner sense of stability. So, you know, I felt that. I felt loss of connection with people, you know, for the first, well, until the vaccine came around. My daughter and her husband and my grandson did not venture out. I mean, they were very protective, rightfully so, because my son-in-law's parents are much older than us and had some health issues. But, you know, I didn't get to see my grandson except on the phone. And there's something about physical presence that's important.
Yeah.
So I missed that. I didn't go to church, you know, so the singing is probably the thing I miss the most.
Yeah.
That you can't really get on a Zoom.
Yeah. Not well on a Zoom.
you know, just being surrounded by the vibrations of music, mm-hmm. even though my singing capabilities have been lessened, you know, to hear and contribute what I can when I can, you know, I missed that. It was about halfway through this last year, I realized I've become, it's kind of an apathetic depression. I don't know how to say it, but it's like nothing makes me feel really good. Nothing makes me feel really bad. I'm just kind of in this place. And trying to just accept that. and not judge myself and not say, what do you have to be depressed about? You know?
Sounds like that open hand again of the identifying.
Yeah. I think I've learned in my life, I've dealt with chronic pain more than half of my life. I have fibromyalgia, but even before that, I had an injury to my right foot that created chronic pain that then morphed into the rest of my body. So this journey of learning to let go, you know, has been a long one for me.
As I'm hearing you process, that heightened body awareness really leads me into my second question, because I am so appreciative of the imagery you provided of that open hand, that heightened body awareness. And my second question was, what are two or three things you have learned about grief during this pandemic? Because it sounds like you had some processes sort of already there, but I'm curious if, as you were talking about the increased isolation, that desire for community, physical community with others, if there were other things you were noticing or that were arising for you as you were learning about grief in this season.
I'm not sure they're new things, but they've been reinforced in a new way.
Sure.
And one is, grief will surprise you.
Mm.
When you think you've moved beyond something, you know, to that place of acceptance and going on with life and everything's fine, it'll come back when you least expect it. And that's how I feel about my anxiety. And some of my awarenesses of loss that I've had, you know, they come back.
Yeah.
They come back. They cycle through in different ways. And it can be at any point, you know, it could be that depression, or it could be anger, it could be guilt, it could be panic. But that's one of the things, grief will surprise you. Another one is, it's okay not to be okay.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Especially those of us who are high aspirations and who work hard to be competent, to be in the world, to be connected. It's okay not to be okay. And I've learned that in a new way. You know, I've had many years of therapy to help me deal with lots of things. So I knew I wasn't okay. But this sense of not being okay, I realize it's not anything I can fix. I can't learn anything new about it. I just have to recognize it in my body, recognize it in my spirit, and say, it's just okay to be here. And to really be here.
Yeah.
You know, not to brush it aside, though I've done a lot of that too, doing distracting things so that I don't have to feel what I'm feeling. Because we can't handle that all the time. So again, that's where the letting go, and also believing that it's this moment. The next moment may not be this way. This is this moment. And if we want to live fully, we need to live fully in this moment, because we don't know if the next moment's going to come or what the next moment may bring. You know, I learned a lot of that with my fibromyalgia, the physical pain that I've dealt with. I would get in a cycle where I'd have a lot of pain, you know, today and tomorrow. And I'd think, this is never going to get any better. But I got to a point where I realized, well, I do have good days, you know, so let's just take each day as it comes. See what I can do. See what I can't, you know, if I can't do something, it's just this day in this moment. So that was also something that I learned in this grief process. Is it's okay not to be okay and to be in this moment.
Yes, to be fully present with the grief.
Yep.
That is something I am still learning. I admit I like the distractions.
Yep.
But the fully present, yes, yes.
I think for me, anger is the hardest one to be fully present to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. To say, I'm really angry about this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's making my heartbeat faster, and you know, it's tightening me up, and I just want to shout.
Yeah.
To say, okay. And it's usually about something I've heard or read it's not something somebody's done to me because I haven't been around a lot of people. But, you know, I've gotten really angry mm-hmm. about injustice. And, you know, Roger's always putting a temper on, you know, holding me back when I say, I really feel like I need to go to this person and just share my story so they have a better perspective. Mm-hmm. It's probably not a bad idea, but, you know, it's more motivated by anger. And I'm going to tell you what it's going to be.
And I think what's interesting, and I forget who quoted it, but underneath all anger is grief, deep sadness. And sitting with that and naming that, I am angry, but I'm also sad, sad that the world is the way it is, sad at injustice. And sitting with that.
And I've chosen to read some books that kind of put that in the forefront. I've read a number of stories coming out of World War II based on real people who lived and, you know, the atrocities that they experienced. And I'm like, people doing that to people. Yeah. And we could be those people again.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that grief. And the recent book I read, hope I can plug this in. It's a book called The Woman They Could Not Silence.
Ooh,
and it's about a woman. Yeah, it's about a woman named Elizabeth Packard who lived in the 1850s, 60s. I think she died in the 1890s. She was married with six children, and her husband was a pastor, and some things started to change with his beliefs, which she doesn't know why, but, and I won't share, but she doesn't agree with him.
Mm.
And in those days, if a husband didn't like something his wife did or thought, they could get them committed to an insane asylum.
Mm.
They needed two doctors to attest that this woman was insane. And even though she wasn't, but so she got committed to an insane asylum in Illinois for 3 years. And a lot of the book is her journey in there and the superintendent. But the short of the story is she got out and she pioneered some of the earliest work in getting laws changed about women's right to their own property. Because in those days, everything she had bought for her household, she had brought with her. It was part of her family. But when she separated from her husband and then got out, she had no claim to that.
Oh my goodness.
She had no claim to her own property. She had no claim to her own income that she started earning. And so she helped to change laws about that and laws about insane asylums.
Mm.
So she's one of those early women, you know, same time as some suffragettes, women helping to make change to better the place of women in society. I'd never heard of her. You know, so it was just a powerful book.
Yeah.
And then to think, even in my lifetime, like in the early 1970s, I would not have been able to get a credit card in my own name. I would have needed a male to sign for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so that just stirs up again all the injustices as women that we've experienced. Which says nothing about Black women, but, you know, women we've experienced and that I've experienced in my lifetime. So I'm grateful to know these things, but I'm deeply pained.
Yeah.
You know, at what we have had to experience and what continues to experience.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. The historical naming and identifying and keeping an open mind as you are aware of historical injustices and how that shows up in today's actions and how we move through the world. Carol, I have one more question for you for today.
Sure.
And you've been hinting at it in some of your answers, which I love. But my last question for you is, what are two or three ways you are learning to honor your grief?
Well, I think, and I have mentioned this, you just live into it. Mm-hmm. The pain of grief, you recognize it. People always kind of look at me and I say, you welcome it. Mm. But again, it's welcoming it with open arms. There is something to be recognized in that grief about ourselves, about how we live in the world. So to hold that grief, to hold the tears, to hold the pain, be alive.
Yeah.
You know, even though I admit I've used those distracting things to not be present, and I affirm that they're okay. But at some point, to move beyond, we have to be in that place. So to be with the grief. And I think what's been especially hard during the pandemic is it's always good to have someone else with you journeying yeah. with that. And, you know, that's been much harder to do. And then the other one is to just keep on moving. Mm-hmm. Do what you can. For me, exercise has helped this summer again, like it did last summer. I walk an average of 4 miles. I speed walk. And, you know, that keeps my body limber, which is good. It sends those endorphins through my body. So even if it's something little, you know, to move, move. And you can move in grief.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, getting fully in our bodies.
Getting fully in our bodies. I met someone on the trail one day who took her shoes off and put her feet on the ground. And she said to me, I've read that we're told we need to really ground ourselves, you know, with our feet. And she reminded me that, yeah, that is a practice that some people do regularly. Just stand up and feel the ground and mm-hmm. ground yourself yeah. and know that in this moment, you are okay, whether you're joyful or you're in pain. You're connecting with the universe.
Sharing about how our bodies hold and experience pain, trauma, and grief takes a lot of courage and vulnerability. Thank you, Carol, for trusting us with some of your story, for sharing bravely and courageously. I don't know about y'all, but I'm especially holding the imagery of the open hand that Carol shared. I wonder what wise takeaway you might be holding. This episode was produced by me, Benita Croyle, with editing help from Alex Woodring and music by my friend Redfa Jan Titihalawa. Holding It Together is a joint production of Women in Leadership and Mennonite Church USA. Look for us on our page on the Mennonite Church USA website, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast streaming site. I'm your host, Benita Croyle. Thanks for listening, y'all. And catch you next month on the flip side.